Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I guess it's been 8 years now, like steadily working in a better, bigger space and really prioritizing and working in all the cracks, even when there's only like 10 minutes. And seeing art all the time, dragging my kids to museums, which they are totally burnt out on. And just keeping my eye on the ball, you know? And so, yes, I was totally frustrated. And I feel like it's possible that my kids, and I hope this isn't true, but like I do always have one eye on the studio and one eye on them. And I, you know, it's hard for me to engage fully with either, but I'm really trying to, you know, separate a little bit.
I am so delighted to welcome Crystal LaCouture to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Crystal is an artist based in Boston and North Adams, Massachusetts. She received her BFA in painting and printmaking from Skidmore College in 2000, where she received the Pamela Weidenman Award for Excellence in Printmaking. While living in New York City, Crystal was a longtime assistant to activist artists Nancy Spiro and Leon Golub, and a printmaker and resident key holder artist at the Lower East Side Print Shop. She's been a visiting critic, attended multiple prestigious residencies, and has her work in notable collections. And in addition to her full-time studio practice and other curatorial projects, Crystal is a curator at Tourists, a hotel near Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts. She exhibits her work throughout New England and New York and is represented by Praise Shadow Gallery in Brookline, MA. Crystal, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thanks, Kaylin. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Of course. So just, you know, like to start out by having you dive right in to sharing kind of about your experience growing up and the artist identity. Like, did you have artists in your life? Was art something that was a part of your childhood? Was it kind of always present, or did you find your way as an artist further down on your journey?
Yeah. Well, I guess my parents were creative. We moved around a lot. My dad was in hospitality. He was from France, and he was a maitre d' at fancy hotels and restaurants my whole childhood. So we moved around a lot, and my mother was sort of a chef and then eventually an herbalist, which became like her later career. But there was a time when they had a catering company when we were kids. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, a lot when I was a teenager, my sister and I would be dressed in, you know, the white shirt and the black skirt, and we would be serving canapes at you know, weddings and champagne. And, you know, it was like kind of a family affair of sort of like a lot of work and then this beautiful presentation, and everyone like looked beautiful and it seemed beautiful, but it was stressful as well. So
well, but French culture, French food, away, I'm like, of course you had like artistic influence.
Exactly. So there was always, and like, there was always this kind of like a buffet my mom would do, and she would bake all these breads, and there'd be like cornucopias and gourds. And so I think although, you know, there were kind of like lean times and we moved around a lot. There was just kind of like this emphasis on sumptuousness, beautiful food, making the house feel really homey, presenting
pleasure, maybe
hospitality, pleasure, hospitality, manners. So I think that although that's not really art per se, I think I just kind of had those inclinations of like visual, you know, putting things together.
Yeah.
And then when I hit high school, I had a really inspiring teacher, and I think that is how a lot of people get launched, you know, into what they do. And I think I was kind of an anxious kid, and I had, I was a good student, but there was something about making art, and I think we were studying expressionistic you know, like Emil Nolde or like the Blue Rider guys. Mm-hmm. And I just like felt so free. Mm-hmm. And then, so I just kind of took it from there and kept going.
Yeah. So where were you a high school student? And then I know you ended up at Skidmore.
Yep. I was in Winchester, Mass at that point.
Okay. Okay, so you've spent most of your life, it sounds like, in the Northeast.
Northeast, yeah. Okay. But we were in Minnesota, North Carolina, Montreal, Chicago. I mean, there was a lot of moving around. And so I think that too affected my practice. Like, I feel like it made me a resourceful person. I can kind of be adaptable in mm-hmm. changing situations. Awesome. Maybe I'm a little bit of a hoarder, you know, those kind of
I just have to name drop. We have another Skidmore grad who's been on the podcast, my friend Caitlin Woolsey, who was an art historian, conversation about art history. And she actually is in Massachusetts area as well. So I'll have to connect you guys. So
place to be, I'm telling
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Well, North yeah. Adams, like, I mean, there's some great, you know, artists. I'm like a big Mass MoCA fan. It's one of my favorite, you know, museums and places to view art. So just love that you're close to that rich cultural area too. Well, why don't you describe your work for those listening who maybe have not seen it yet? Obviously, we'll be sharing lots of images in publishing the podcast, but I like to kind of have artists describe what their work looks like. I just think it's like an interesting way to think about our work, right? And you can talk a little bit about your process as you do that.
Sure. Well, I'd say my work kind of is of two camps. I have like a, you know, a sustained painting practice, abstract, large scale oil paintings. And alongside that, I make these sort of tribute drawings that are called mama drawings, and they influence the paintings for sure. Mm-hmm. And then there are a bunch of other spin-off conceptual projects that have to do sort of with motherhood, like the devotional, helping, gift making. I'm really interested in the idea of my work doing something for the viewer mm-hmm. or for the person who receives it. And maybe that's a fantastical idea, but I just feel like there's power in imbuing the work with intention. Mm-hmm. So I'll speak about the mama drawings, which is like an ongoing project right now. So during the pandemic, my mother, who was like this world famous herbalist forager person, she has a company called the Herbal Academy. And she was just like the healthiest person ever, pretty young. And in the pandemic, she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, which was like the most out of left field thing ever. And so we were all very shocked. And she's like, you know, was my mother and very close friend. Mm-hmm. And because of the pandemic, that coinciding with the illness, like I couldn't be with her, which was just so hard because she lives only 20 minutes from me, but there was like this, you know, impenetrable distance because, you know, the danger of her, you know, health and vulnerability.
Yeah. And lung cancer with COVID, cancer. You know,
it's like shocking, like all of her siblings smoke and she was just this health nut. And so really tragic. And I just felt so like impotent, you know, like I unable to be helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think as an artist, like I'm always trying to think of like ways around a situation. And maybe also that it's not just art that exists for the sake of making, but it's also impacting my life or it's about my life or it's mm-hmm. about others in my world. And so I had found these scorekeeper shooting targets. They're like air gun, like or archery targets from a sporting goods store. And I saw them and I had been making a lot of paintings for years about pattern and textile and about mm-hmm. the idea of textiles being a memory prompt and sort of like a portrait of a person. Mm-hmm. And so I really responded to the just sort of like the formal structure of these targets. And so I took them home and I started playing with them. And something about the change of, you know, making large paintings at a wall and then instead just working on these small papers at a desk, mm-hmm. created like an intimate letter writing sort of feeling. And so I just started making these sort of interventions on top of the target structure. And they sort of look like mandalas and the colors are feminine. And I kept thinking about how I'm like reclaiming this paper from like the violent, speedy masculine nature of this kind of structure. And I just thought, God, there's real power here. Like I want to harness this somehow. And so I just started making them for my mom, thinking that they were these like totems, of help or power. And then in each one, like somewhere in embedded in the design is the word mama. And her name was Marlene Adelman. So there's also the MA there, but I just sort of thought, let me just like pump up the power here and offer them.
Yeah.
And so now I've made it like over 100 of these and they're very colorful and they're gouache on this kind of newsprinty paper. So they kind of like sit atop the paper and it's like almost like an, it's like really feels like an intervention to me. So anyways, that's sort of like something that helped me going through this process with her, like being ill, like, you know, somehow.
So would you deliver them to her or kind of
show them to her? And yeah. And I just sort of thought I was like doing good work, like, like there was some kind of effect, like when you're faced with something that's so unimaginable, you can kind of go there with like magical thinking and like, who knows, maybe this does something, maybe this does send healing powers. So anyway, so that I really liked, I like making those still. And now since she has passed, I've kind of changed what the drawings are about. I still make them, but I sort of also now offer them to others, like other mothers. I'm deeply affected by gun violence and especially, you know, school shootings of children. I mean, my God, nothing is sadder or more wrong. And so I've sort of been, you know, directing these drawings as help for that, you know, that kind of,
I was hoping you were willing to go there with this conversation. Cause, when I first came across your work, it was, I think it was through the, after the Uvalde shooting, you had made a post referencing like it's been 10 years since Sandy Hook. And so, you know, the target drawings is what do you call that series?
They're Scorekeeper.
Scorekeeper. Like those were kind of my introduction to your work. And it was actually really interesting to, you know, I immediately wanted to do like a deep dive. Like I was like, who is this artist? Like this work is amazing. Like Hilma off Clint, like all this like kind of visual language that I'm really interested and drawn to. And, but the, you know, what was interesting to me was, oh, like somebody kind of making work and speaking about this major thing that we're all like struggling with and trying to process. But then reading your statement about how these were actually sort of born out of this experience of losing your mother and, you know, kind of trying to act as protector or channel, you know, sort of this feeling of reclamation or protection for her, just made the work like that much more interesting to me. And then, you know, I want you to talk a little bit about the series too with the photographs and stuff. But let's just stay on the target drawings just for a few more minutes. I'm just wondering like how, I don't know, how you continue to kind of process the way that that work has become so timely and needed. And, you know, what are your hopes for that work? Like, where are you planning to show it? Because right now, if I was a curator, I would be putting those like on every wall. Like, let's have a conversation about this, you know?
Yes. Right. It is so urgent what is happening in our schools and in government. I mean, I just don't understand the people who can think that having guns available to everybody is like just. I mean, it's utter shock. And the Uvalde shooting really hit me hard. I mean, yes, the numbers, mm-hmm. but it was also like a primarily like an immigrant community. And like, these are people who came here for a better life, a safer life, and their children were getting an education, and then they were just taken so senselessly. So yes, there's a lot. I have shown them, you know, in 12s in a couple shows, mm-hmm. Like each framed. And I think that is beautiful. And people like to buy them, and they do really. And I've gotten feedback from people who live with these works that they kind of feel like a station of power to them. And I think there is like a radiance, and there's like maybe even like a sonic feeling to these mm-hmm. sort of like reverberating high intensity, like colorful works. And I love that in that situation for in like a home. But yeah. I do want to make, and as I keep accumulating them, I mean, it's multi, like all good work. And I'm glad I have this in my practice. Like there's a lot still to do with this work, and mm-hmm. it really keeps me going. Like I find the possibilities in composition responding to like a set structure of like measured circles is infinite. Like I surprise myself with all of the new ways I can change it, into a new image. And that's really endlessly sort of exciting to me. But I want to make like a huge wall of them. Mm-hmm. So I keep kind of accumulating them in order to have a massive showing. Mm-hmm. And I do hope that opportunity comes soon.
Let's put it out there.
Let's put it out.
And also, when it happens, I want to go see it. Let's put that out there.
I want to like sell them and then have money go towards, you know, like anti-gun violence causes. Yes. So, yeah, I mean... And again, like I worked for these artists, Nancy Spiro and Leon Golub, and they were true activists in every part of their life, like feminists, you know, anti-war, they just were so amazing in every little drop of their life from like morning until night. And I just feel like we have a job at hand right now, all of us artists, besides doing what we feel like we need to do for ourselves and mm-hmm. and be good citizens, like do something good if you can, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, amazing. I love that work. And it's funny, like one of the things that I thought of when I first saw it too was even just my own experience of how I knew right away what the paper was. And, you know, my brain kind of went back to this childhood memory of receiving a gun for a birthday when I was like 15 or 16. You know, my dad, like I grew up in a rural area, hunting culture was like very much a part of my life. And it's been amazing to kind of see, you know, even the trajectory of my father and his relationships with guns kind of change over time due to this crazy, you know, situation that we find ourselves in. But yeah, just kind of, I don't know, that everything that all of that evokes is just so potent right now. And yet, like you said, isn't that the very nature of what we find art to be beautiful and powerful in is the reclamation, is the taking what is hard and trying to create something beautiful out of it. So I love that of that work.
I mean, they are like literally shields. I mean, that the whole like, sort of like a protective shield on top of violence. Yeah.
Come to the mountains with me. I am planning another artist retreat in the mountains of North Carolina, and I want to meet you there. We have hosted some epic retreats in the past in this community, starting with the Artist Mother Retreat in 2019 in Tennessee and our 2022 retreat in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And we are headed back to that same location in North Carolina outside of Asheville this coming June. And this time our retreat is for all female identifying or non-binary artists. You do not have to be a mother. We are making the circle a little wider and more inclusive. So this is going to be hosted through the Thrive Together Network, which is the online community for women identifying artists that I run and co-host with Jamie Smith, an artist from Vancouver, Canada. Jamie will be joining us at the retreat. And we are just so excited to bring you sort of the same format as we've had in the past, but with lots of exciting new faces and a freshed up feel. So this retreat is a 3-day retreat with a mix of fun, experimentation, rest, and lots of connections. We will have 4 fantastic workshops. 1 paper and encaustic exploration to nurture play and experimentation with Kelly Shepherd Murray. That one's going to be so amazing. Kelly was recently on the podcast and she's going to show us how to work with paper and make little sculptures and then how to dip those in wax and do encaustic. The 2nd workshop is sculpting a painting with Lauren Salazar, who's actually on this episode right now. If you are identifying with Lauren's work and want to get to know her, you can meet her at the retreat. She's going to be doing a workshop and showing you some tools for how to sculpt a painting. And then, of course, the beloved founder of the Artist Parent Index and great artist Sarah Irvin, she's going to be there and she is going to be hosting a workshop called The Writing Artist, From Manifestos to Art Criticism. We're going to talk about how art writing is super important and influences our careers. And then finally, our last workshop is going to be with Heather Bird Harris, an amazing artist from the Atlanta area, who's going to talk with us about connecting with your community through social, newsletter, and activism outlets. Can't wait for that one with Heather. She is incredible. So along with the workshops, there will be lots of downtime so you can enjoy a hike, you can take a nap, you can do some shopping, some writing, some sketchbooking, really whatever your heart desires, right? This is your time. Each evening, we will be gathering for conversation and connection, and this will be centered around an art supply happy hour. So think drinks, desserts, 30 plus artists playing with materials and getting to know each other. It's going to be so fun. The retreat location is 25 minutes outside of Asheville. It's very easy to get to. You can take an Uber from the airport. And Black Mountain, this town where the retreat center is located, is just the sweetest little mountain town. It has great views. It has a little downtown with shops, restaurants, breweries, and just a very laid back and fun Appalachian mountain vibe. So if this all sounds good to you, I want you to hear this, okay? We are offering an info session all about the retreat so you can get all your questions answered and learn everything there is to know about what we're going to be doing before you commit and buy a ticket. So the info session is Thursday, March 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern or 10 a.m. Pacific. I will be putting up a replay link if you're hearing this episode after that date and you still want to watch that info session. You can head to www.thrivetogethernetwork.com/retreat to get all the details. The Zoom link or replay link, again, will be there for you if you miss the info session, so you can still reserve your ticket after you've watched that info session. And we are going to have an early bird ticket rate window that will start right after that info session is over. So that is going to happen March 30th, and the early bird ticket rate window will close March 10th. So we don't want you to miss this discounted price. If you're considering coming to the retreat, definitely check it out and get on it as soon as possible so you get several hundred dollars off your ticket for that early bird rate. Really, I can't wait to come together to meet you at the retreat, to just share in community in real time. So many of us are just Instagram friends or social media or online friends, right? And this is just the most beautiful setting and scenario to come together and get to connect. Really, these retreats are in my top art memories in my whole art career. And I know this one is going to be super special too. So feel free to bring a friend, invite a friend, come as, you know, a group, or just come by yourself and soak up some solo adventuring and make some new artist friends at the retreat. Hope to see you in the mountains. All information is at www.thrivetogethernetwork.com/retreat. I'm going to come back to some of the other projects, but can you, just for a little more context, tell us who you are kind of outside of your art practice? I know you have a family and kids. Maybe talk a little bit about, your life with them and, sure. And yeah.
So I have three children. We lived in Brooklyn, New York, my husband and I. He was a magazine publisher and I was doing lots of, art jobs and maintaining a practice. But then I guess, and I feel like I was, well, you were much younger, but a little bit younger for at least my community when I had my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so I had my daughter and life just completely changed. It just felt like the city wasn't the right place anymore. It felt mm-hmm. dirty. It felt like the reasons to be there, like going out at night, like weren't applicable anymore to my life.
Yeah.
I really craved nature and family. And so my husband also is from Massachusetts. So when she was two and we were robbed and then rats like ran through our apartment, construction. There were so many little indicators that it was time to go.
Yeah.
And we left and we moved to Wellesley, Mass, which is where my husband is from. And it's great. Now I also have twin sons. I was pregnant with twin identical boys at the time when we left. And so I came here to a new town, totally different from New York. And I suddenly had like three little kids under, 2.5. And it was madness. But then they went to school and we survived and they were really rambunctious. Now they're all, the boys are 11 and my daughter's 14. Okay. So like they're a little more independent, a lot more independent.
My oldest is about to turn 11. So he'll be 11 at the end of May. And I love his age. He's like so just still has that like tender-hearted, mama's boy like energy, which I hope he always has. I hope that's just part of his personality and not like a fleeting like childhood thing. But then, you start to see the like ownership of like who he's going to be in the world and that kind of coming out, just that preteen,
phase. Oh yes. The hormones are rising in my household. Yes. It's intense. And it's funny. I felt like things were really crazy, and I could hardly make anything and didn't make anything really worthwhile for like 5 years there. And then they went to school and things were kind of easy. Things were busy, but now it's a different kind of busy. Like they're a little more intense. There's some doors. There's like social media monitoring. There's like a new complication.
Yeah.
The sort of like 8-10 was like a golden period, I felt.
Yes.
So things are like under control to some degree. And my studio is behind my house in like a carriage house that we converted into my studio. And it has been the entire reason I have anything going right now.
Yeah.
Because the live work. Yeah, it's like the right recipe for me. Like I can be running in and out of the house. There's no cleanup. I just leave everything out. Yes, my brushes are trash, but I don't clean up every, end of day. It's like, it's huge. So
yeah, but that I always say that little bit of just the walk, because I have a garage studio and just the walk from the house to the garage, it's like perfect because there's still that separation where it's not just a mess around you in your domestic space all the time, but it's so accessible. Like I'm like, I want every artist parent to have a detached garage studio, or a carriage house. I think that's the dream.
Huge. And I can also see from my windows in the studio into the house.
Okay.
And I can kind of like, if my husband's out late or working, and I can kind of see if the kids are like, in the kitchen or something. Like I kind of can be places, but they are really separate spaces. Yeah. The kids don't sit in my studio very much.
Yeah.
Like that does for me.
Yes. No, it worked when I had one kid. And then, I imagine having twins, it's like, nope, get out of the space.
I mean, some people have those kids who come in their studio and they're like doing drawings and it's all very calm and beautiful. But, and I kind of had hoped for that, but that was not my situation. I mean,
yeah,
person, they walk in and there's pain everywhere. And yeah.
Well, tell me just briefly, you know, now that you're 14 years into motherhood, you were making art almost that whole time, if not taking, you know, some breaks here and there. But I'm just curious, like, how did your painting practice kind of change through some of those phases? Because you were doing the, you know, it, I would say the work that we've already discussed has been more recent. You know, you started it in 2020, the mama drawings, and then, you know, the 11 months we'll talk about next. But prior to that, kind of what were you making? And, you know, did you take a break from, say, large oil paintings or something during those young motherhood years?
Yeah, I mean, I have always kept my hand in it, of course. When the kids were really little, I had a pretty crappy studio, like an attic studio, but I still worked every day. You know, even if I was exhausted at, you know, 9 p.m., I'd go up there for a half hour. I did some different things, like I illustrated a children's book called The Moth and the Firefly. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of graphic design work for people. I was always painting, but yes, they were smaller. Yeah, I guess it was just kind of more straightforward abstract painting. I mean, I've done some other like compilation works with like photography and design. This series called Memory Quilts. But it really wasn't until about 8 years ago when we moved into this house and I got the bigger studio that I could really scale up and actually like work more consistently. Mm-hmm. And then I began to show a lot more. And that it was good. It was probably when the kids were about five, the youngest were five, that I really
started. And so now you're on the other side of that. I'm just curious, you know, if you struggled during that time with patience, feeling like you were never going to get there, you know, like was that, did that eat away at you? Did you just want the longer hours?
And having my sons, having the identical twins after the first child was just exploded my world. Mm-hmm. And I think I was like a little bit controlled and more rigid in how I was a mother, what I expected of my work time. And then with them having, you know, being born, it just, everything changed. Like there was no time. Mm-hmm. Everything was a mess. I had to let go. Mm-hmm. And I think it was maybe the best and most instructive thing that happened to me. Like we would show up places with my three kids and we would tear up the joint and stitches and broken arms. And I mean, we were like, it was crazy. But that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you sort of let go and things are out of your control. And then maybe I was reading a little bit more. Maybe there was like less hands-on making and more reading and thinking and drawing.
Yeah.
But then eventually, yeah, like I guess it's been 8 years now, like steadily working in a better, bigger space and really prioritizing and working in all the cracks, even when there's only like 10 minutes.
Yep.
And seeing art all the time, dragging my kids to museums, which they are totally burnt out on. And just keeping my eye on the ball, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I was totally frustrated. And I feel like it's possible that my kids, and I hope this isn't true, but like, I do always have one eye on the studio and one eye on them. And I, you know, it's hard for me to engage fully with either, but I'm really trying to, you know, separate a little bit.
Yeah. I love that you brought up the memory quilts. I have them pulled up right now just because I think for so many artists, particularly artist parents, you know, there's just this natural draw to bring in the domestic during those young parenthood you know, times when you have lots of kids' clothes laying around at your feet, but you don't necessarily have paintbrushes that you can quickly pull, you know? And so you have two of these on your website, two of the memory quilts, just this idea of like, you know, still playing with composition. And I just love seeing artists who have gone through like those years and allowing the work to remain important and connected. Like, I love that you have that on your website still, you know, because I know people who would never show that. And it's just like, yeah, but we need to see that.
How can they not? They are my, you know, it's like really, yes, I'm trying to keep things separate, but like they are me, I am them. We are all in one ecosystem in this world, in my household. And so just to explain about the memory quilts, there's an important idea in this one for me, in that I'm not good at everything. Like mm-hmm. I would have loved to. So these are they're images of my daughter's clothes years. And so instead of just passing on all of the clothes, I would photograph every object, every shirt, pants, hat, before I passed it on, just to sort of remember like that body at that age in that place. And so I'm not like a textiles artist. And so there's an admission that I couldn't make a real quilt out of this, but instead I can compile these photographs in one straight image. And I thought of it sort of as a portrait of her from age 1 to 10, but also sort of like a shorthand, like a compressed memory file. Like,
yes,
fire, there's nothing left. All the mementos are gone, but I have this, you know, file, this JPEG. And
absolutely.
I can remember. So, yeah.
I love it. Well, and it, you know, you did reference, and your paintings do reference your paintings now. There is a textile reference in sort of the imagery of quilt blocks and kind of taking simple shapes and repeating them over and over. You were talking about, you know, the infinite ways that you see circles, like kind of, and being able to move in and out of different compositions just with a few circular shapes. And I immediately thought of quilts. Like, for me, that is the grid of like a square, you know, that can be repeated over and over and over, and you just never really get sick of you know, kind of that experience of playing with those shapes. So I, you know, I do love too how even the visual language is connected to the larger paintings that you're making now. Do you look at quilts or textiles? Like, is that part of, or is it you're pretty like painting
focus? Are the hugest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. And I love the idea that certain, shapes are universal, right? There's triangle, there's square, and then there's, you know, the versions of all of those things. And to repeat, I don't know. I have this thing that I always say in my head, like repetition is love. Like repetition, repeating something makes it devotional, makes it meditative, makes it sort of like an ongoing effort and like system. And I feel like there's something about making a system and repeating something shows that you love it, or you love the why of it, or the who you're offering it to. So I feel like these same shapes, you know, they're the same shapes for all of time. So
yes,
use them.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I feel like that's an amendment to one of my favorite Mary Oliver quotes. That's attention is the beginning of devotion, comma, also repetition.
Wow. I'm going to steal that.
okay. So Crystal, let's go back to the 11 months project. I want to hear kind of how those mama drawings transitioned, you know, through this experience of losing your mom. You have this work, you know, of, again, kind of processing the experience of trying to protect her and shield her, and then, you know, processing her passing. Can you describe the 11-month body of work and talk about that?
Yes. This is a recently finished work. So we're raising our family Jewish. My husband is Jewish. I was raised Catholic. And the temple that we belong to was so present in following the passing of my mother. And they were always bringing gifts and like challah and like just kind of showing up, leaving something on the porch. And I just thought, I feel like we're very anonymous in that community. And I didn't even know that, how they would even know that she passed. But I found that so beautiful that there was this kind of like outside group just helping and loving us. Mm-hmm. And they, one of the things they dropped off was this book called Mourning and Mitzvah. And it talked all about like the phases of grief and like the certain traditional time periods for which one mourns certain important people in their life. And for a parent, it is 11 months. Mm-hmm. And for a spouse, or even a child. I mean, I think there's revisions to this. Mm-hmm. 30 days. So 11 months versus 30 days sort of speaks to the primacy and the colossal like connection between a parent and a child. Like it's the hugest, right? Mm-hmm. I am of her. My children are of me and yours, you. And so I thought, oh, I have to do something for this time, like to mark mm-hmm. her missing from my life. And so I like this, it's kind of funny. Like I just made up this system and I painted my nails and I put a little heart on my thumbnail on my left hand, and she was left-handed. And so for me, it was like a little badge, a little mourning badge. And because she was a forager and an herbalist and somebody who was always touching the earth and picking at the earth and collecting things, mm-hmm. I just felt like I would experience the world for her. Mm-hmm. And so for 11 months, I kept this little heart on my thumb, and I would go out every day and take a photograph of my hand somewhere out there. And my hand looks like her hand, and my mm-hmm. hand would touch my children. And it was sort of like a self-portrait, because I was also just taking the photo with my own camera. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like a moment. It was a way to mark every day with a small reflection of her, and to like reanimate mm-hmm. and just think, oh, you would love to see this. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's kind of like, I didn't talk about it as I was doing it. I just sort of did it. And then at the end, I have these like 335 images of my hand out there.
Yeah.
And I don't want this work to be schmaltzy. I do want to address sentimentality mm-hmm. about it, like as something that is or is not taboo. Mm-hmm. But I also, I feel like there's something about making little pieces of something, of a work that in as a whole becomes a monument. I mean, that's like a feminist principle.
Right.
So the collection of the images, all again, like all the different ways, like my hand is on a boat in the ocean. My hand is like touching a sleeping child. My hand is like touching a pomegranate or a flower. Like it's also a memorial to me in my life, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking a lot about who I am without her. Who are you when your biggest modifier is no longer there to hold stories, to say it's okay? And also when, you know, you're really sad and you're going through something, who do you need? You need your mom. So, and it was to have 11 months every day to think about what all of these things mean was my way of finding a morning practice.
Oh, amazing. And I, you know, again, it speaks to these greater themes of systems and repetition and kind of how do we process something so painful and outside of ourselves in like this intimate way. I think too, like, you know, I was very close to my grandmother who passed away also during the pandemic. And one of the things that this project does for me is it's a catalog too, just of very literally how often you're thinking of her, you know? And, you know, I think even as a person like going through grief and the loss of somebody you love, like sometimes we kind of can put it off like, oh yeah, she was important, or oh yeah. But I mean, I'm sure I think of my grandmother every day, if not, you know, multiple times a day. So I don't know, just even seeing it as the kind of accumulation of your grief, you know, and the moments of your grief, I think is really powerful.
And also important for me to find the most alive things, you know, to put my hand on, like things like new growth and flowers and leaves. Like it just, because there is in that first year, I think, were the first time you every day, the first mm-hmm. every day, you know, like the first day of that time since. And now it's been a year, and that feels like it's not new anymore. So it was very interesting. And there's part of me that also wants to model love and mourning and being present to my own children. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much that I've been reflecting on as both the daughter and the mother in this. So
wonderful. Well, one of the things I love about your practice is, you know, you have this kind of very traditional oil painter lineage and part of your, you know, your portfolio, but then you have these really beautiful, you know, conceptual projects that really are about your humanity. I feel like all of these kind of, I don't want to call them side projects, but sister projects to your painting practice, right? Which has this obviously very masculine tradition, as is now being changed through amazing female painters like you. But I love these. It's like, you know, like looking at the list of the projects on your website, it's like all of these other parts of you just seep out in your practice and you're embracing them as the artist that you are, right? Like the human that you are. You know, like the Lullaby Archive project, would you want to explain that real quick? I love that one.
Yes. And that's an ongoing project mm-hmm. presently. And I'll also plug it because it's a crowdsourced project. And I want to reach as many people and include your songs in this mm-hmm. repository. So if anyone wants to find me on my Instagram and DM me and say, hey, please send me one of the mailings, I'm happy to do it. Postage is all paid. It's anonymous. Anyway, so I'll explain that. So this was sort of another memorial project mm-hmm. in some ways. And I'm also, I keep thinking about like, what is a memorial? Like, what does that look like? How does it change? Like, I'm not trying to always make it specifically about my mom and right. me and, you know, this, like, I'm not obsessed with my mom. It's like, what, like, I'm faced with a new thinking about what a memorial is. Like, that right. is so interesting. And so around Christmas time, I always do like a mailing. For 20 years, I've done some kind of addition mailing at Christmas or, you know, at the holiday season. And this year, I set up a website. It's called the Lullaby Archive Project. And I sent a postcard out where there's like some pieces in the mailing where there's like I'll send one to you, Kaylin.
Yes, please.
Song lyrics as like the hug, and there's some transparencies. And then ultimately there's a postcard that you return to me where I'm collecting the lullabies that were sung to you and those that you sing. And you don't have to be a parent to participate in right. any way. You can just like, well, what are the songs?
You had a parent, right?
You had a parent. Maybe they didn't even sing to you, but maybe you have a sick friend or a dog and you sing to them. Or mm-hmm. It's one of the most universal connections between like all humanity that
right.
we sing and we soothe and we, it could be nonsense, it could be humming, but like there's this inclination, especially when you're a mother to a baby, to mm-hmm. sing as a method of soothing and caring and yes. lulling to sleep. And so the word lullaby is quite loaded, but it can just be a song. Like when my sister and I are just, we are inclined to sing in, mm-hmm. in joy, in grief. It's something we've always done together. We don't have the greatest voices. We have good voices, but I think it's just like one of the most joyous and remarkable ways to be in communion with others. Mm-hmm. And so this postcard ultimately asked people to send their songs to me. What are the mm-hmm. important songs? And I'm interested in how popular songs are adapted for lullaby use. Mm-hmm. The occasions when the song that was sung to you is the one that you sing again, like yes. the legacy of the songs. So I keep collecting and I have a website where people can input them directly to the website, lullabyarchive.com. And then also I have an Instagram where I'm a little behind in it, where I'm putting songs that have come in mm-hmm. with an audio track. So it's almost like a playlist as you go through the Instagram of all of these songs. And awesome. I think it'll develop into something, maybe like a performance, maybe like a long multi-lullaby track, vocal track. So it's endlessly fascinating. And I hope to keep going for years.
Awesome. I love it. Yeah. Like, my husband is a musician and he teaches popular music and recording. And we've always kind of been in bands and done like music stuff. And just that idea of music being a language that is shared within a family and it becomes like part of your family culture, right? Like, I think about that a lot because, you know, I have this like deep and unapologetic love for Southern rock because it's what my dad listened to when I was growing up, like Lynyrd Skynyrd. And, you know, and there's parts of me now as a woman in 2023 who I'm like, I don't know if this is like, but I hear that song come on and I feel like a kid again, and I feel connected to my parents. And so I think a lot, you know, I'm pushing it, I guess, outside of the lullaby, but even just this idea of like what songs reside in our home, like kind of echoes in the walls of our home and, you know,
and in your body too, you know,
in your body and like,
and
you know,
I think it's like, it's not the lullaby thing. Like when you have your baby and the first night you're with your baby and you stand there, you know, hips swaying as we all did as mothers, I don't think there's any plan about like what is going to come out.
No.
Like I think I sang 10,000 hours of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, like round and round with like this kind of like rocking motion in the dark with some baby. And that was profound. And I also feel like making this list, this crowdsourced repository, it's available to anybody.
Yeah.
Anyone can listen to this. If you're out of ideas, like, put on these songs or try singing one, or, you know, like, I think it's just, it's good. It's a good thing.
It's good. It's so good. And just, to have that experience of sharing music with your kids or, I think from the lullaby to like, you know, when you're like, now I'm an adult and if I'm anywhere in public with my mom, An American Pie by Don McLean comes on, I am like right back to her.
Oh, every word.
Yeah. Her every word and her being a young mom. And like, I knew that for whatever reason, that song gave her a spark, you know? And like, just like seeing how your parents like kind of get engaged by something. I feel like music is so universal for like that experience. So it's just so cool. You'll definitely, I'm sure, get a lot of submissions to the project after folks listen to this. Oh, Crystal, this is amazing. We have so much more to talk about. We're going to have to make a studio date happen the next time I'm in Massachusetts. But I want to ask you one or two more questions and then we'll wrap up for today. Just want to know, what are you working on kind of currently, maybe some goals for, you know, the rest of your year? I know you mentioned you have a solo show coming up.
Yes, I'm really excited about that. Right now, you know, I'm very like project oriented. So I feel like I have to get the one thing done before I can do the next thing, next thing. So right now I'm working on a benefit print for, an incredible, I'll give them a plug, Boston Art Review, which is an incredible magazine and run by women for the most part. It is like the high thinking, most beautiful journal of the Boston art scene. And I'm really proud to be a great writer has written about me, and it's their 10th issue anniversary. So I'm doing like a benefit woodcut. So I'm working on that. Hopefully I'll be done with that this week. And then, yes, I have a solo show with my gallery. I think the end of October. And so I'm going to begin planning for that and working my butt off for the next 5 months. And then I think there's a couple other things in the works other places. So, you know, just always work. Yeah.
Is that at Praise Shadows?
Praise Shadows Gallery. Yes, in Brookline, Mass.
Awesome. I know Madeline Donahue shows with them too, right?
The queen artist mother. Yes.
Right. I know. She's
a wonderful artist in person.
Absolutely.
And I have some other book projects. Like a lot of these, like the 11 months will become a flip book.
Cool.
Nice flip book. Like I felt like that was the right size. And a couple of things. I'm working on a mama book drawing. I'm sorry, Mama drawing book.
Yes.
And and I have to explore this lullaby thing with a sound engineer friend. So
yes. Oh, I'm so excited to kind of see that turned into like, actually great memories of visiting Mass MoCA. So I went to grad school in New England. And so like on the way there and back, I was living in Tennessee at the time, you know, several times we would stop through at Mass MoCA. And do you know the work of Julianne Schwartz, who I first saw like installed at Mass MoCA and then have seen other places, but just, I don't know, there's something about the way she uses sound that I'm like, that could be like interesting with this lullaby, you know, kind of concept. So
yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, I love to close with our final five questions so everyone can get to know you just a bit better as we wrap up. Crystal, tell me, who is your biggest art crush?
Okay. I was thinking about this and I had like a long list. So I was thinking
of the moment. It's okay.
He'll love Clinton. Mary Sully. Do you know Mary Sully?
I don't know if I do.
Everyone should look her up.
S-U-L-L-Y?
Yes. She is a Native American artist working in the first half of the 20th century. And she was like an abstraction genius, like Hilma af Klint, Emma Kuntz, like kind of like wallpaper looking. They're the most inspired abstract works I've ever seen in my life. And I am like a huge, huge fan. So everyone look her up. She made these portraits of like celebrities where it would be three different drawings. And it sort of just captured what she thought that the personality was like. They
oh
are
my
really
gosh.
Cool. Mary Sully, look her up. I think she was Hoda Sue. Yeah.
What a great reference. I have her pulled up right now and I'm like, can't wait to dig in. So cool. Thank you. Yeah. So cool. Definitely can see why you are interested in her work. Okay. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Oh my God. I am like of like Southern France, Southern French stock. So I feel like, you know, like sunny, summery Italy, south of France, like that kind of vibe. But really where I want to go is Japan, like more than any place. But I'm a little bit scared. Like, I think it will be so powerful. Like I have to
prepare. You won't want to leave.
So I will be so blown away. It's scary. Like it's so different. But I think it's going to be such a mind-blowing experience. I'm going to have to really prepare myself.
Yes. Well, I hope that happens soon for you. Tell me a book or a film that has been a big inspiration to you.
Oh my God, so many. But you know what? I keep going back to this. You know Iris Murdoch? She was an English author. She died a bunch of years ago. Anyway, she wrote this book. And it's not even the greatest book, but it's called The Sea.
Okay.
And it sticks with me because it was about like a theater guy, like a director of theater in London, and he like needs to get away from it all. And so he goes to like a little modest cottage on like a white cliff on the beach in cold England. Uh-huh. And he just eats like toast and jam every day and stares out at the sea and writes. And it lots of things get in his way and there's like all these crazy characters. But just the idea of like a really away from it all place as an artist is very appealing to me.
Yeah. I'm like, that's the artist's dream. So reading a book about an intentional art practice.
Like a hiatus. Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Oh my God. It has to be one of these like Southern, you know, south of France, long table on a hot day with just everything.
Good wine.
Good wine and like cheese and bread and everything is like fresh and delicious, tomatoes and everything's like kind of unadulterated, just like hams and cheeses and tomatoes and basil and herbs and things. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
everyone's picking and there's no like formal place settings. Love it.
I love those kind of meals too. Okay. And who would you like to give a shout out to or thank for supporting your work?
Everyone? No, I'm just kidding. I think my husband, I mean, he's like my first believer in me every time. And that's quite beautiful. But yes. I'll shout out like the tribe of the world, you know, like you and Instagram and women artists and like, we're all doing this together. Like, I really believe there's like an alchemy to all of us being here right now together, supporting each other. So
absolutely. Just get in the flow. Come on. We're radiating those circles outward, right?
Together.
Okay. Last but not least, where can folks find you? Of course, we'll be linking all the things, but I just like, you know, for you to say so, because I know people are pulling you up right now. Sure. So what's your Instagram and your website?
It is my long, crazy name. At Crystal LaCouture, CRYSTALLE is my first name. That's my Instagram. My website is my name as well, crystallacouture.com, lullabyarchive.com, and at Lullaby Archive. I think Lullaby Archive Project. I don't know. You'll find me on Instagram. I'm there mostly. Please DM me if you want to be included in this mail art project.
Yes.
And a quick shout out to you, Kaylin. What you have done here is remarkable, and you're really contributing. So thank you for making this podcast and inviting all these great people to talk and share.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.